In our study of Christian virtues, we come now to the virtue of courage, the second to the last of the virtues we will be considering next week, wisdom, and that will bring the series then to an end. Now, courage is a very important virtue. It takes courage to live the Christian life in a world that is opposed to God and to those who speak of God as Christians are commanded to do. We have to dare to be different. We have to be willing to lose much on behalf of the gospel. We have to be willing, even, Jesus says, to lose our lives for the sake of the gospel and for the sake of the kingdom of heaven and for the sake of remaining faithful to our God. As we look at this subject of courage, I want first to talk about some of the biblical words related to it. And I want to talk first about a word that's found in the Old Testament. This word has a range of meaning. It can mean, for example, simply to be strong. If you look at Genesis 25, verse 23, we find there that the Lord said to Rebekah, "Two nations are in your womb, two peoples shall be separated from your body, one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger." That's about Jacob and Esau, and Jacob ultimately being stronger than his brother Esau. The word can also mean to harden, especially to harden the heart. You find that use in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 30, where God is talking about, or Moses is talking about, the conquest of the land of Canaan and the traveling of Israel through the wilderness on the way. "Sihon, king of Heshbon, would not let us pass through, for the Lord your God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate, that he might deliver him into your hand, as it is this day." But in other passages in Deuteronomy, we find this word translated to be courageous. And I want to call your attention especially to Deuteronomy 31, where Moses is giving instructions to Israel and to Joshua at the end of his life and just before they are going to go into the land of Canaan. He says first to all Israel, chapter 31, verse 6, "Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them, for the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you." Then Moses calls Joshua, and he says to Joshua, "Be strong and of good courage, for you must go with this people to the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall cause them to inherit it." And then going down again to verse 23, Moses is talking again to Joshua, only this time we have him giving Joshua his formal charge as the leader of the people of Israel. "Then he inaugurated Joshua the son of Nun and said, 'Be strong and of good courage, for you shall bring the children of Israel into the land of which I swore to them, and I will be with you.'" But this same word also appears in Joshua chapter 1 a number of times there, as the Lord speaks to Joshua, or as Joshua speaks to the children of Israel. First of all, Joshua 1, verse 6. "Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them." And again in verse 7, "Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go." Again in verse 9, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." And finally in verse 18, Whoever rebels against your command and does not heed your words in all that you command him shall be put to death. Only be strong and of good courage. This is all related, Deuteronomy 31 and Joshua 1. It's all related to the conquest of the land of Canaan. And of course, courage was required of the people of Israel as they went in to conquer the land and to fight against their enemies and the enemies of God. I want to call your attention also to a couple of psalms that use this word. The first is Psalm 27. We might say of Psalm 27 that it is the great psalm of courage. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? And at the end of that psalm, then verse 14, wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. And again in Psalm 31, verse 24, also at the very end of that psalm, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart, all you who hope in the Lord. So that's the Old Testament word. It has this range of meanings, strong, to be strong, to harden, to be courageous. And I think you can see the relationship of those three meanings. It's not really three different meanings, but it's three applications, we might say, of a word that has a central core of meaning, of the strength of one's heart. It can be negative and hardening the heart. It can have the idea of being strong to do what is required, or it can have the meaning of being strong in courage, having a strong heart in that sense. There are also a number of words in the New Testament, and the word courage does not appear too frequently in the New Testament, but we have words that are associated with it, especially, I think, the word bold. We're going to look at a number of passages here in order to see this idea of courage or boldness as we find it in the New Testament. Let's look first at Matthew 22, verse 46. Matthew 22, verse 46 says, and no one was able to answer him, that is Jesus, a word, nor from that day on did anyone dare question him anymore. This was after Jesus had answered the scribes and the Pharisees and so on, about those questions that they had asked to ensnare him and get him into trouble. And he had answered them so wisely that no one dared, no one was bold enough, no one had the courage to question him anymore in that way. Another passage that uses that same word is Mark chapter 15, verse 43. Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent council member who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, coming and taking courage, went in to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. That's the same word that's found in Matthew 22, verse 46. He took courage to ask for the body of Jesus. Now, a book of the New Testament that has a lot about this idea of courage or boldness or confidence even, is 2 Corinthians. And we're going to refer to a couple of places now in 2 Corinthians that use this same word that we found in Matthew 22 and Mark 15. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 2, but I beg you that when I am present, I may not be bold with that confidence by which I intend to be bold against some who think of us as if we walked according to the flesh. The same word appears again in verse 12. We dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. And chapter 11, verse 21 as well. To our shame, I say that we were too weak for that, but in whatever anyone is bold, I speak foolishly, I am bold also. And one more passage, this time from Philippians chapter 1, verse 14. Most of the brethren in the Lord, having become confident by my chains, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. So there you have this idea of boldness or courage or confidence even in this whole area that we're talking about. Another word is found in Acts 28, verse 15. This is a different word and occurs only in this one passage in the New Testament. From there, when the brethren heard about us, they came to meet us as far as Appii Forum and Three Inns. When Paul saw them, he thanked God and took courage. Remember, Paul is coming to Rome after being seized by the Romans and appealing to Caesar, and he's coming to face trial there in Rome. And we find him, therefore, perhaps at this point, somewhat fearful about what's going to happen at this trial. But the brethren meet him, and the brethren give to him courage, strengthen his courage to face this trial. Another word that the New Testament uses is related especially to the idea of speaking. And this word occurs, for example, in Acts chapter 4, verse 13. Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated and untrained men, they marveled, and they realized that they had been with Jesus. Verse 29 of the same chapter. Now, Lord, look on their threats and grant to your servants that with all boldness they may speak your word. And verse 31, and when they had prayed, the place where they were assembled together was shaken, and they were all filled with the Holy Spirit, and they spoke the word of God with boldness. This is speaking boldly, but it can also apply to boldness in behavior. So, for example, in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 12, in whom we have boldness and access with confidence through faith in him. That is, boldness to draw near to God. And this idea occurs again in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 16. Let us have boldness to enter the holiest of all, to obtain mercy and to find grace to help in time of need. And Hebrews 10, verse 19, again talks about boldness to enter the holy place, the most holy place. Then, finally, there's another word that we find again in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, this time, verses 6 and 8. So we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. And verse 8, we are confident, yes, well pleased, rather, to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. Or chapter 7, verse 16. Therefore, I rejoice that I have confidence in you in everything. And chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. This is the same chapter we referred to a little bit earlier with regard to another word. Now I, Paul, myself, am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence am lowly among you, but being absent am bold toward you. That's a different word than you find in verse 2 when he says, I may not be bold, and by which I intend to be bold. And you find this word also, this last word, in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 6. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear, what can man do to me? Now, as you look at those uses of this idea of courage or boldness or confidence even, I think you find especially three areas of application that the scriptures use these words. First, there is the area of facing enemies, facing danger, of course. Courage is necessary in facing the enemies of God. The second place is in speaking the gospel. We must be bold to speak the gospel. And the third is boldness to enter the presence of God, to come before God. And of course, this boldness or this courage is required because God is so great and awesome and fearful a God. Listen to what the psalmist says in Psalm 119, verse 120. And I think from that you can understand why courage is necessary to come into the presence of God. It ought to be, anyway. My flesh trembles for fear of you, and I am afraid of your judgments. So there's a certain courage or boldness in creatures like ourselves, insignificant and sinful creatures like ourselves, in coming into the presence of the holy and mighty God. That gives you some idea, then, I think, of the scriptural uses of this idea of courage. Let's turn in the second place now to a definition of courage. One definition I found was this: the quality of mind or spirit that enables a person to face difficulty, danger, pain, etc., without fear. Now, I find two problems with that definition. The first is this idea of a quality of mind or spirit seems to me to be rather vague, and we want to be more precise, I think, than that. And the second thing is this term without fear. I think sometimes courage does involve having fear, but controlling that fear to the point that one is able, nevertheless, to do what is required in the circumstances. Like a soldier who's afraid in battle, but nevertheless does his duty there in the battle. So here's another definition from the Merriam-Webster dictionary: mental or moral strength to venture, persevere, and withstand danger, fear, or difficulty. And I think that's a somewhat better definition, mental or moral strength rather than a quality of mind or spirit is more precise, and it leaves the possibility of courage overcoming fear when it says it's withstanding danger, fear, or difficulty. But I think we need really a biblical definition of courage. And when we look at the idea of courage in the Bible, I think what we find there is that it is a virtue for Christians, anyway, that is rooted in our trust in God. Courage is the confidence in God that enables us to do our duty and to fulfill our calling in spite of fear or without fear. Now notice the three elements of that definition. First of all, it is confidence in God. We don't want, when we're talking about the Christian virtue of courage, simply to talk about mental or moral strength. Rather, we want to talk about confidence in God. Courage is not confidence in self. Courage is not, in the Christian context, a simple overcoming fear by our own efforts. It is rather a confidence in God. There is a kind of courage that is confidence in self, or that is the overcoming of fear without reference to God. There are plenty of unbelievers who have displayed courage of all kinds, moral courage, physical courage, and so on, in different settings. But when we talk about the Christian virtue of courage, we want to understand that this virtue of courage is confidence in God. And it is then understanding that God is able and willing to uphold us in whatever circumstances we may be facing. But it is a confidence in God that is related to specific things that God has said, or specific knowledge of God's characters, or specific promises that God has made. This courage is not just in a vague and general way a confidence in God's ability to help and in God's willingness to help those who trust in Him, but it is a specific confidence in the promises He has made. He has promised to uphold and strengthen us over against our enemies. He has spoken His word to us, and we can rely on that word. We find that word an utterly reliable word. He has revealed to us His character of compassion and mercy and strength, omnipotence, in fact. And we can rely on that character of God to strengthen ourselves in circumstances which might otherwise cause us to be afraid. He has spoken and He has said, I will preserve you, I will keep you, I will save you, no matter what men do to you. I will not permit any temptation to be greater than you can bear. And it is then this trust in God which gives to us the courage to do our duty and to fulfill our calling. That's the second element that we want to talk about. It's the ability to do our duty and to fulfill our calling in many different circumstances. When we are facing enemies who persecute us, who mock us, who show their hatred of us, or of whom we may be afraid, even though they have not done anything specific against us as yet. In speaking the gospel, when God calls us to speak the gospel, in resisting temptation to turn from obedience for the sake of relief from suffering, or even for the sake of relief from fear. In doing our duty and fulfilling our calling, we need confidence in God so that we can do it courageously, so that we can do what God commands us to do. The Christian's focus in life is always to do what God wants him to do, to fulfill his calling, to do his duty. And very often, this fulfilling of our callings and this doing of our duty requires courage. And then in the third place, we have to talk about this other element, the matter of fear. And I think from a biblical point of view, ideally, courage is without fear of men. There's always fear of God, of course. There's always that trembling of the flesh in the presence of God. And that fear of God should overcome fear of men. But ideally, courage in the scriptures is without fear of men. And so we have repeated exhortations throughout the scriptures in all kinds of different settings. Do not be afraid. Do not fear. You saw that, for example, in Deuteronomy 31, when Moses was exhorting Joshua and the people of Israel, be strong and courageous, do not be afraid. And again in Joshua chapter 1, perfect love casts out fear, or to put it differently, perfect trust casts out fear. But of course, we have the problem that our faith is not always perfect. And because our faith is not always perfect, we sometimes do have fear. And we have to recognize that fear, and we have to deal with that fear. And the way to deal with that fear, of course, is to turn to God, to ask it courage of Him. And then when God gives us that courage, we can do our duty, we can fulfill our calling as He commands. So those are the three elements that belong to courage, I think. Confidence in God, doing our duty and fulfilling our calling, and coping with fear, and ideally putting fear off altogether. Now the third thing that I want to do here as we look at this virtue of courage is to look at some scriptural examples, both on the negative side, that is, saints who were afraid, lacked courage when they should have been courageous, and on the positive side. On the negative side, first of all, let's think about Abraham and Isaac going down to Egypt. You remember that on a couple of occasions, Abraham and Isaac left the land of Canaan and went down to Egypt with their wives, and that there in Egypt they lied about their relationship to their wives. They concealed that truth. And they concealed it because they were afraid. They did not have the courage, the confidence in God, to confess before the Philistines the truth about themselves and their wives. Now, I think that that lack of courage may have come in the first place from the fact that in both cases, Abraham and Isaac were being disobedient. God had commanded them to sojourn in the land that he had promised them, and they had left that land. So they had put themselves into a situation where they should not have been in the first place. And of course, when we've compromised ourselves in one aspect of life, it becomes much easier to compromise ourselves then even further to deal with the difficulties into which we have brought ourselves. And that was, I think, the case with Abraham and Isaac. A second example is found, I think, in Reuben's intention to rescue Joseph from his brothers. You remember that the brothers of Joseph wanted to kill him, but decided instead to throw him into a pit. And Reuben intended to come back later and rescue Joseph from that pit. Now, this is a very common kind of lack of courage. Reuben had good intentions. He knew what was right. He meant well. But he didn't have the courage to do well. He didn't have the courage to confront his brothers and to tell them they must not do this. He let his brothers do to Joseph what they thought best, and he meant to do secretly what he knew was right. I think you find this very often among Christians as well as among unbelievers. People are afraid to speak out when they know it is right to speak out. They are afraid to do right when they know what the right is. They mean well, they want to do well, but they don't have the courage to do well. That's a sin which we all need to confess. A third example comes from the life of the Apostle Peter. Peter denied Christ three times, and this was because he was afraid of getting into trouble as Christ himself had gotten into trouble through his righteousness. Peter denied him emphatically. He denied him with cursing and swearing. Peter was so fearful that he did not dare even to confess that he was one who had been with Christ. We find another negative example in Peter's life in Galatians chapter 2, verse 12. Galatians chapter 2, verse 12, where Paul rebuked Peter for separating himself from the Gentiles when some of those who were of the circumcision joined them in Antioch. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles, but when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. That was a sin of Peter too, and Peter and Paul confronted him about it. But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter before them all, "If you, being a Jew, live in the manner of Gentiles and not as the Jews, why do you compel Gentiles to live as Jews?" And then one final example in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 16. The apostle has faced trial now. And he says there about that trial, at my first defense, no one stood with me, but all forsook me. Paul was left to face that first trial alone, without any support, without any help, because apparently the Christians there, present with him there, were too afraid to acknowledge their relationship to him. Paul recognizes it as a sin, and he has forgiven them that sin. May it not be charged against them. So those are some negative examples, and perhaps you can relate some of those examples to your own experience with others, or even your own experience of yourself and your weaknesses and lack of courage in certain settings and in certain situations. Seek courage then from God by the work of the Holy Spirit. We also have some wonderful examples of courage in the scriptures, and I want to turn to those now. Perhaps the one which we would all mention first in scriptural examples is David facing Goliath. And you remember the setting there. It's in 1 Samuel 17. The armies of Israel and of the Philistines were facing each other. And the Philistines had sent out their champion, the giant Goliath, to challenge someone from Israel to enter into single combat with him. And this would settle the differences between Israel and the Philistines. But no one in Israel has the courage to stand up against this giant, this very strong soldier of the Philistines. And I think you can easily imagine the situation. Here's Goliath standing, confronting the army of Israel, roaring out his challenge to the people of Israel, to the soldiers of Israel, to come and fight with him. And there is no one in the army who has the courage to do this, including Saul, the king. And no one, therefore, is going to ask any questions of his neighbor. No one is going to say to his neighbor, "Why don't you go out and fight with this Philistine?" Because that neighbor will just simply turn back to him and say to him, "Well, why don't you do it?" Everybody is silent and everybody is embarrassed. But now David comes, and David hears this giant roaring out his challenge. And immediately David begins to ask the questions that no one else dares to ask. Why isn't anyone responding to this challenge? Why isn't anyone willing to go out and fight? And as David asks these questions, his brothers, especially his brother Eliab, becomes angry with him. And you can understand why, I think. They don't want this question asked. They don't want to say, "Because we're all afraid." No one wants to admit it. And so Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when David spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, "Why did you come down here, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Is there not a cause?" And he went on asking his questions. Finally, happens is that this comes to the ears of Saul, and Saul calls for him, and David says, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." But then, of course, David goes out and confronts the Philistine, and we have his gloriously courageous words in answer to Goliath's contempt. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Verse 43. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Everything was against David. Goliath was a grown man, a trained warrior, well-armed, much larger, physically larger and stronger than David. David was a youth with no armor, no weapons except his sling and its stones. And David confronts Goliath without any showing any fear at all. But notice here that we see in David's example the three things that we were talking about. We see that this courage is a trust in God. This day, the Lord will deliver you into my hand. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. It is confidence in God. In the second place, it is the doing of duty or the fulfilling of calling. Now you might say this is not particularly David's duty to confront this Philistine, but the duty belonged to someone in Israel, and there was no one else to assume this responsibility. Everyone else was afraid, and so David assumed the responsibility, made it his duty, his business, his calling to go and confront him. No one else was available. And of course, we see him coping with a situation in which fear would have been a very natural thing to feel. And he shows no evidence of fear at all. Another wonderful example of courage is the three friends of Daniel with Nebuchadnezzar in the burning fiery furnace. It's Daniel 3, verses 16 to 18. Nebuchadnezzar is enraged with these three friends because they have refused to worship his image. And they answer him, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, that is, if you are going to throw us into the burning fiery furnace, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace." So they first say to him, "Our God can deliver us from the burning fiery furnace." They didn't know yet whether God would or not. They understood it was possible that they would perish in that burning fiery furnace. But they said to Nebuchadnezzar, "Our God can deliver us if he wants to deliver us." And the second thing they said was, "And he will deliver us from your hand, O king." And I think what they mean here is, you may throw us into the burning fiery furnace, and we may perish in that furnace, but we know that our God will ultimately deliver us from your hand. That is, we will not perish everlastingly in the furnace. God will save us from this great trial, and he will bring us to the life that he has promised us, the everlasting life of glory in heaven. And the third thing they say is in verse 18, "But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up." And I think they're saying there, even if God would not deliver us from your hand, even if he failed to give us the life that he has promised, and we perished everlastingly in your furnace. Still, we won't serve your gods. We will have nothing to do with your gods, no matter what God does to us. Again, there's no evidence of fear. There's a clear confidence in God, and there is the doing of their duty and the fulfilling of their calling to remain faithful to the God who has made himself their God. We find the spiritual nature of courage revealed also in Jacob's wrestling with the angel at Peniel. Now, surrounding all of this is, I think, first of all, Jacob's fear. We have to see that Jacob was afraid. Jacob was not a man much inclined to trust in God. He had spent 20 years with his uncle Laban, and while he was there with his uncle Laban, he was not really trusting in God. He was always conniving against Laban, as Laban was also conniving against him. Two rascals conniving against each other, really, is what you have there. It's not a very admirable story on the part of Jacob. And when Jacob actually meets Esau after his wrestling with the angel, we see, I think, also a fear, an unbecoming fear in Jacob. He bows down to Esau seven times, and he makes it appear that he's going to follow Esau with his flocks and herds and children and so on. And he gives Esau this enormous gift of animals in order to appease Esau's anger. He's still afraid. I think we see also, even in Jacob's wrestling with the angel, that at first, anyway, Jacob was relying on his own strength in this wrestling match. He was wrestling with that angel who had come to him, using all the physical strength that he could muster, and using all the tricks of wrestling and fighting that he knew, and he failed completely in his wrestling with the angel. It did not succeed in doing anything. And finally, the angel, who was the Lord himself, touched him on the thigh and shriveled the muscle of that thigh. And it was at that point then that the angel said to him, "Now let me go." And Jacob said, "I will not let you go until you bless me." He knew at that point that he was wrestling with God. And he dared to say, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." But he dared to say it because now he was trusting in the promise of God to him that he would bless him. That's spiritual courage. That's what spiritual courage is all about. As we come into the presence of God, saying to him, "I will not let you go until you bless me." We see Jesus himself setting an example of courage in various places. Let's look at Luke chapter 9, verses 51 to 53. "Now it came to pass, when the time had come for him to be received up, that he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem." Jesus is going to Jerusalem now for the last time. He knows he's going to be captured there, he's going to be put on trial, and he's going to be crucified, and that cross was dreadful to him. But he had come to do his Father's will, and he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem, and sent messengers before his face, and as they went, they entered a village of the Samaritans to prepare for him. But they did not receive him, because his face was set for the journey to Jerusalem. That cross was terrifying to the Lord. You see that terror of the cross in his prayers in the garden. "Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me," as he sweats, as it were, great drops of blood. But he set his face steadfastly to do his Father's will. We see a lighter example in Luke chapter 13, verse 32. The Pharisees came to him saying, "Get out and depart from here, for Herod wants to kill you." Now, it apparently was the case that Herod did want to kill him. It may be, we're not certain, it may be that these Pharisees were lying, but at least I think the Pharisees' intention was to frighten Jesus away. They wanted to scare him out of their area. And he said to them, "Go tell that fox, 'Behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I shall be perfected. Nevertheless, I must journey today, tomorrow, and the day following, for it cannot be that a prophet should perish outside of Jerusalem.'" Jesus says to these Pharisees, "Go tell Herod, that fox, I have work to do, and when I'm done with the work, then I'll go, not before." Finally, let's refer to a few psalms again in this connection. The psalms are full of exhortations to courage, examples of courage, words of courage in the face of many evil circumstances. Psalm 3 is one such psalm. David begins there by saying that he has many enemies, many who say of him there is no salvation for him in God. But he confesses his confidence in God. "You, O Lord, are a shield for me, my glory and the one who lifts up my head. I cried to the Lord with my voice, and he heard me from his holy hill. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me all around." Or Psalm 11, where many are saying to him, enemies are saying to him, "Flee as a bird to your mountain. The wicked bend their bow, they make ready their arrow on the string. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do?" And David appeals to God. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids test the sons of men. The Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness. His countenance beholds the upright. Psalm 46 is another one. "God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear, even though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with its swelling." Or Psalm 91, verses 5 to 7. "You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you." And many, many others as well. Courage then is confidence in the Lord's promises, in the Lord's character as merciful and compassionate, willing and able to help us in all the circumstances of life. And it is the continuing to do our duty and to fulfill our calling in spite of the counsels of fear and the circumstances which may well cause fear to us. We look then to God and pray for His Holy Spirit to give to us courage in all of life. May God bless you with His word.